So, okay, so now the Thomas is like this. Thomas says, well, maybe it means like this. Maybe you should take the name of God and then inscribe it on a, let's say, a piece of sharp metal, like a knife. And then you'll use that knife with one which has the name of God on it to cut the piece of wood, let's say, that has God's name on it. So you'll be destroying one name with the other name. So the Talmud says, no, that's no good either. Why? Because that which is destroying the piece of wood is not the name on the knife, it's the knife itself, the sharpness of the knife itself. So therefore, you're still not destroying one name with another name. All right? Okay. Now, that's really the end of that little piece of Talmud, where the Talmud removes the possibility of the word in the Torah, in that verse in the Torah, where the oral law zeroes in on, the halachic verse, that states precisely the formula of cursing, blaspheming the Creator. Now, that's the end of this little piece of Talmud. Now, of course, now we have a third problem, as I said, and we're going to answer all three. The third problem is, what kind of sense does that make when we say that the person should write God's name? Maybe the Torah means you're writing God's name down on a piece of wood, and then you'll drill it, or you'll cut it with a knife. Where did they get this idea from? Where did the Talmudists get this idea from? Where did that idea come from? Okay. So we have three questions. First was my question, that every curse always has as its source God. Second question was, how do we derive from in Leviticus 24, how do we derive from those extra three words that you must curse the Creator with the using the name of the Creator? How do we get that? Okay? That's question two. Question three is, where did the Talmud come up with this concept of writing God's name down on a piece of paper? Well, actually, it could be even a piece of paper, but I just had a piece of wood and then just cutting it with a knife, okay? Answer is, there's one underlying idea over here. And once we grasp that underlying idea, you see how everything will fit in. The underlying idea is that cursing the Creator is not like an ordinary curse. The violation of cursing the Creator is really the diminution of him. Okay? That's the concept that underlies this violation. The concept that underlies violation means in cursing and blasphemy, what you're doing is you're reducing, you're detracting, you're diminishing the name of God. That is the violation. Okay? Now, let's keep that concept in mind. Once you have that concept, now you'll see how all three questions are answered. It becomes immediately apparent as to why the Talmud offers the possibility of writing the name of God down on a piece of wood and then drilling it. Because that would also constitute a diminishing, a taking away, a sign of disrespect for the Creator. Okay. Now let's go back to the question of how they derive it. Let's take my question. It was, what kind of question is this? There's a formula for cursing, and the formula for cursing always involves the Creator as being the source. The answer is because blasphemy is not the same thing as cursing a human being. Blasphemy is any kind of, the concept of blasphemy is diminishing from the name of God. That's what the concept is. It's not like ordinarily. When you ordinarily curse somebody, that's a different idea altogether. That is not the same thing as blasphemy. That means you're not permitted to say that God should curse a certain human being. But in cursing the Creator, there's a different concept. The violation is not the curse itself. You see, it's the diminishing of the reverence for God's name. That's what it is. Therefore, the Talmud rightly asks, how do we know that you have to have the Creator involved in the curse itself? Maybe if the person just cursed the creator without having the creator's name as the source of this curse, that alone is enough diminution. Where do you see that you have to have the creator as being the one that should activate, that should actually perform the curse? Okay? Now the Talmud, now we understand the derivation also from the extra three words in the verse. You see, the Talmud says like this: one of the methods of deriving, as some of you may know, of deriving halacha from the Torah itself, or showing halacha from the Torah, is by the Torah's method of adding extra words. And over here, the addition of the extra words fits in just perfectly. What it means is as follows. The first part of the verse says, he who curses the name of God to death. Now, over here, we're just talking about diminishing from the name of God. But then it says, it repeats it again, when he curses... So, now we're back to this... All right, we're back to the question... Hello? Yeah, we're back to the question... of how do we derive from those extra three words the fact that the creator has to be the source as the one, the performer, as well as the object. And the answer is now very simple. What it means is like this. The idea of cursing is reducing the reverence, diminishing from God, from the name of God. That's the idea of cursing. When the Torah adds those three words, what it means to say is you must reduce the Creator in a possible way. In other words, when the Torah adds words, what it means is increase the quantity to the force. Now, since the Creator is the source of everything, so you'd have to use the Creator. If you wanted to take away to the highest degree, you'd have to use Him as the source, because He is the Almighty, the most powerful being in existence. So you'd have to use the Creator Himself in order to do it in the worst possible way. In other words, you'd have to invoke the most powerful source in existence, which is God. So if you just said the curse, if you just said that Yossi, I'm using the word Yossi because now they're blessing, if you just said that Yossi should be destroyed, that would not be the highest form of a curse, because you still haven't invoked the highest source for that destruction. The highest destruction is the Creator Himself. So therefore, you must say, Yossi, the source of all power, should destroy Yossi. Okay? Does everyone get that point? In other words, by adding those three words in the Torah, what the Torah is doing is the Torah is saying that this diminution of God's name must be accomplished with the highest, most powerful source in existence. So therefore, the only formula that's possible is that the Creator, in other words, the source of all existence, should be the source from which destruction should take place. So therefore you have to say Yossi should be destroyed, but Yossi should be destroyed by Yossi, by the greatest source. You'd have to have God would have to be used both times, both as the one who initiates the process and as the one who is the recipient of the process. Because if you just said that Yossi be destroyed, you're not saying by who. So you're not involving any source. And therefore, it would lack in the full concept of diminution, because in order to make your diminution to the greatest degree possible, you must also invoke the greatest source possible, which is the Creator Himself. So therefore, you'd have to use the Creator as the source of the harm that is being done, and also as the one who receives that harm as well. It must be from the greatest source, and it must be, of course, to the Creator, which would necessitate using the name of God as the recipient of the... Of course, if you don't use him as the object, then, of course, there's no curse to begin with. So, therefore, there are two components, that God, the person must use Yossi as being the recipient of the curse, and then the person must also say that this curse, or this damage, or this harm, or this destruction must be initiated by the greatest force in the universe. Therefore, he has to mention the Creator again. Okay, so therefore we see that the concept, but the underlying concept of this whole piece of Talmud is, gives us an insight into what is meant by a curse, or by blasphemy. Blasphemy is the diminution of the name of God, and this diminution must be accomplished on the highest possible level, which would necessitate the involvement of the highest source and power of all powers, which is God himself. That's how Talmud states, that's why you have a formula, that a person is not really called a blasphemer unless he uses the Creator in two frames. He must use him as the source of the harm and the destruction, and also as the recipient of the harm and the destruction. In other words, basically you must say that Yossi should destroy himself. Yossi should destroy Yossi. If he just says that Yossi should be destroyed, of course, this person cannot be considered a righteous person. It's a violation. It's a terrible thing. But he still is not technically, he hasn't done it in the fullest manner which would make him deservant of the penalty of death. Okay? We have to, in other words, what the Talmud has to ascertain here is what is the exact formula which the Torah is speaking about, where the person is not simply saying something bad. A person can say many bad things and not be considered a righteous person. Certainly not. He would be considered an evil person. But in order to be deserving of the death penalty, he must do it in a specific way, in the most horrible way, and that is to use the Creator both as the source and as the recipient of a curse, of a horrible thing, a destruction or a curse or whatever. Okay? That explains all three questions. It answers my question as well, because my question was, every curse always has God as the initiator, but every curse is not the same as blasphemy. Every curse is different. Every curse means that you aren't permitted to say that an individual is cursed by God. That's where you aren't distorting God. But over here, blasphemy is where you diminish the name of God, and the Talmud rightly raises the question, well, if a person just said that Yossi should be destroyed, that thing is diminishing the name of God. But then the Talmud says, no, we see from the extra verse, from the extra phrase, that this extra phrase indicates that it must be done on the highest level in order to be deserving of the penalty of death, verse states. So therefore, must have the Creator being the initiator and the Creator being the recipient. And the third question, of course, is also answered, why the Talmud says that if a person, that perhaps it means a person takes the name of God, writes it on a piece of wood, and then drills it, that he takes a knife and cuts through it, that this would be considered also a violation, because since it's diminishing God's name, that would diminish from God's name as well. And there is a prohibition, of course, that a person is not permitted to erase the name of God. By the way, I one time had a question that came to me that someone wrote, God's name, one of the names of God, on a blank. I had to write it because that's why I mentioned last week that this area, very careful when you study areas like this, that you can get involved in violations without realizing it. What happened was the teacher wanted to demonstrate to the class, show the class what one of the names of God is in Exodus, where Moses asked God, when the children of Israel ask me, what is his name, what shall I say? And then God replies, Eki, I'm saying it, I'm changing it, because I can't say it the right way. Eki Asher Eki, I will be that which I will be. Okay, now that idea is an idea of God's existence. I will be that which I will be. So it's a deep concept, it's a standard. It has to do with the fact that God's existence is changeless, okay? So that is, according to many scholars, considered one of the names of God. So this teacher, who happened to be a very learned rabbi, but he was explaining this, and he just wrote it on the board. So it was brought to my attention, and I called Rabbi Feinstein, and I asked him the question, and he said, of course, you've got to take the blackboard and just put it away forever, because you're not permitted to erase that. What happened was, though, by the time I got back to the blackboard, some youngster didn't realize he just erased it. But one of 613 negative violations of the Torah. Permitted to erase the name of God. So because you're diminishing from the reverence for God. So that's why the Talmud raises that also as a valid possibility.
Rabbi.
Yes.
A point. We were at Bar-Ilan University last week.
Yes.
And Bar-Ilan has the entire Talmud on CD-ROM.
Right, that's true. I know. My son's trying to buy it, as a matter of fact.
All right, well, he needs to talk to me.
Oh, good. He'll be happy to hear that.
Because I was blown out of my socks.
Really?
But now, see, one of the problems they had was how could they produce the Talmud and all the responders with the text of the Torah, which contains the Tetragrammaton.
Right.
And how could they do it and use it without violating this principle you just talked about?
That's correct.
So,
Not just the Tetragrammaton, actually the seven names of God.
Yeah, the
seven names.
Yes, that's correct. So how did they get around that?
Okay.
The answer is that on the computer generation, it's not written.
That's correct.
It's just generated letters.
That's right.
And so every time they push, when they turn they send it back to the files, they're not actually writing the name, and they're not erasing the name. It's just a generation.
That's correct. As a matter of fact, another question was raised. Let's say someone has a tape recording of God's name.
That's
right. Can you erase that tape, re-tape over that?
We discussed that last week also.
That's correct. That is not considered the name of God. It must appear like a scribe would write it. Not the modern technique is not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I had an interesting question, which was... the question was with regard to taking a picture of the sun of the sunset, because one of the things that you're not permitted to do is to draw a picture of the sun. And here, of course, my decision was that you're not permitted to do it, because even though when you take that picture, you snap a photo of the sun. So what happened now could be considered, just like the case you mentioned, that's not halachically considered as drawing, because you're simply activating the silver there. But if you open up the camera, as a matter of fact, you'll destroy everything, because the light will destroy everything. There is no real picture in there that is visible for the human eye. The only problem is, when you send it for developing, you're instructing the person to produce the picture, and there he is producing a picture. So... that is somewhat of a problem. So you have to know exactly, you see, how to apply the, in modern analogy, sometimes, it's not considered a violation, but then another time you got to be careful, because sometimes it could really involve a violation. But back to this text of the Talmud, the important thing is, I think if you go over this, is to see that when you take a look at a piece of Talmud, you must look for the underlying premise. And once you find that premise, it makes sense. It doesn't make sense, it means you did not hit that premise. And over here, this premise is extremely important, because you see that the rabbis are having these discussions, but the discussions revolve around one underlying premise, that the concept of blasphemy is diminution of the name of God. It's like cursing a person. That's a completely different phenomenon. That's where you're not violating... You're not taking away from God's reverence, but what you're doing is you're cursing a specific individual, and you must use God as the source, because that is the violation, to say that God should curse so-and-so. But over here, it's a different concept. Cursing God and cursing a human being are not to be put in the same category. Cursing of God is diminution of the reverence for God, and that's why these Talmudic questions really make sense. And once you see the underlying principle, you see also the derivation from the extra words, the quantitative increase that it must be three, and also you see why the Talmud raised the question about writing the name of God down on a piece of wood. Maybe that's the violation. Okay, So we've really finished this this small little piece. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to take them. If not, I will mention something else that's in this piece of Talmud, which I avoided because I want to keep a logical order and not get sidetracked. But I will take. I'm about to take up another piece that's right in this. Another principle, Talmudic principle, is right contained right here in this piece of Talmud. So, if there are any questions, fine. If not, I'm going to continue.
Continue.
Okay. Now, the Talmud, in stating the law, it says like this. I don't know if you have that piece of Talmud in front of you in English. It would be a good idea, though. It states like this. How do we know this? So we say Samuel said, that's one of the Talmudic scholars, because the verse says, and if you curse the name of God, and then the Talmud says, well, how do we know that this term is means to curse, as we said before? So the Talmud says, well, we derive that from Balaam, because he used the same expression, and over there it can only have one meaning. And then the Talmud says that the warning for this is from another verse. And that verse is in Exodus. And there it says, it uses the word Elohim. Now, Elohim, I'm saying Kim, it really should be Him, but I can't pronounce that. So it's Elohim, I'm saying Elohim. Now, over there it says, Elohim lo sakala, which means God, you shall not curse. It also means you shall not curse a judge as well, by the way. But the Talmud says it's a reference to God as well. So that is a warning, the Talmud says. So in other words, the Talmudic statement is, where is the warning? There must be a warning in the Torah. Again, when the Talmud wanted to give as a possibility the idea of drilling a hole in a piece of wood that has God's name on it, it says the warning would be from Deuteronomy, where it says, "You shall not do so. You shall destroy the names of the that the idolaters write and scribe on their religious objects, and you should not do this to God, your God," which means you're not permitted to erase the name of God. So the Talmud says that would be the warning in the event that we would interpret, if we should interpret the verse in Leviticus as meaning drilling a hole, well, we have to have a warning for that. So the Talmud says the warning was from Deuteronomy. Okay. Now, in other words, the Talmud says there are two possibilities here. One is that it means to curse, and then the warning is from Exodus, where it says you shall not curse God, and use the word Elohim, which means a judge, but also means God, so that we care. Or you could say it means drill home, it immediately says, and the warning will be from Deuteronomy. All right, now what is this warning business? When a person just looks at a piece of Talmud in English, not familiar with it, say, well, what are they talking about? What's the concept of a warning? Where does this come from? The concept is as follows. The concept is that whenever the Torah gives a punishment, it always must have a warning also. It doesn't have to be before. As you see over here, the warning could be from Deuteronomy. But there must always be a warning. Let me just give you the most blatant example is in Leviticus. All right? In Leviticus, you have... and it's something that you should be familiar with. It's in Leviticus, let's take 18. Okay? So 18... Take a look at 18:6. All right, so here it's speaking of sexual prohibitions. That now it says 18:6 gives a general principle that you should not that you should not have intercourse with anyone that's a close relative. And then it states in 7 that the it states that the nakedness of your father and your mother you should not uncover. All right, and this means the by the father, it doesn't mean the father himself, it doesn't mean homosexuality. Over here it means the father's the wife of the father, even though it's not your mother. So in other words, there's a prohibition against living with someone who was the wife of his father. And also the second one is the mother. Now take a look over. See, now this is in Leviticus 18:7, and it gives a whole list. It keeps on going, or a whole list of all the people one is not permitted to live with. Then you have in Leviticus again later, you have a repetition, of this law. Take a look. 2010. I'm sorry, 2011. A man who will live with the wife of his father, he revealed the nakedness of his father, they should both be put to death. Okay? And it goes through the, again, the violations. For instance, homosexuality is prohibited in 1822. It just, but over there it just says you shall not live with a man the way one lives with a woman. And that is 1822. And then it says that anyone who does so will be put to death. That's 2013. Okay? So, and et cetera, et cetera. In other words, it has in 18, it tells the prohibition without telling the punishment. And then in 20, it gives you the punishment. Now, why is the Torah repetitious? So the oral law explains to us that every case in the Torah where the Torah gives a punishment, there always must be a warning. And this is a principle. What is the reason for this principle? The reason for this principle is that the Torah is not a book of punishments. The Torah really is a book of morals and ethics, a book of God's system, God's law. And the punishments only result from the person doing an action through which he deteriorates his soul. Punishment is not just is not simply because God wishes to punish people. So that's why in the Torah, whenever we have a punishment, there always must be another statement, which is a warning. What does the warning show? The warning shows that this is an evil action. The person who does this, this action is evil. If the Torah would just say, and if a person lives with the wife of his father, he should be put to death.
Rabbi, we've got 1 minute.
Okay. Then it would imply that the God wants this person put to death. That's it. He's capricious. No, the Torah first says you shouldn't do that. When the Torah says you should not do that, the Torah is saying that there is something in this which is wrong and evil. And then it states the punishment. But the Torah never just gives punishments, because then the Torah will be a book of punishments. That's not what it is. It's a book, really, of ethics and moral perfection. Punishment is only there because in order to institute the system, this is necessary, but not as an end in itself. The end in itself is perfection. And that's why the Talmud states that that's the style of the Torah, that wherever you have a punishment, there always be some place in the Torah where it also gives a warning, where it shows that this is an imperfection, not just simply a statement of punishment alone. A statement of punishment alone will not do. Okay, we will stop over here.